Yes. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
Now it's garbage. Another movie night.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. We are Just Another Movie Night, and I am Scott.
I'm Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Scotty.
What are we doing today?
Talking trash.
Talking trash, indeed. This is our show to review, spoil, debate, crap on, and give second chances to the hated, the lowest rated, the much debated, and the often forgotten flicks on the internet. All while asking the question, is this the worst movie ever made? And if not, what is? Because here on the show, we truly believe you can't review film unless you know what the worst is. That brings us to what we've been doing all month, which is... this was a total accident this month. We've just been watching movies that happen to have a theme about people being trapped in a location. It's just peril.
Terror happens at their location.
Yeah, and so far, we started with a person trapped in a pool, which... can't believe that exists. Then we had bunch of people trapped on a train.
Yep.
Then we had people trapped on a yacht. Right. Yes. And each time there was a thing that was stalking them. Mm-hmm. So the first one was an alligator or a crocodile. The second movie was Satan himself.
Mm-hmm.
Third movie was a mutant cat hybrid creature of we don't even understand it. And tonight... We got one we don't understand at all, but here we are once again with a train movie, kind of.
I mean, it should be noted that this is our second viewing of this, and we should know. We should know more than what we do right now, but we don't.
Yeah, and I was going to say that. I was gonna set it up, but then say it, but I might as well just say it now. Tonight, we're talking about a movie that might actually be the movie that made us watch and love bad movies.
I think so.
Because I think this might have been the first movie you and me shared. Well, I mean, there was movies like Witchboard and stuff like that we had watched together.
Oh, there's a lot of trash from like before this.
But this was the movie that made us go, our minds blown. And it somehow planted one scene in this movie, planted itself into our subconscious that we, throughout time, remember this one bit. And this is one of those movies that we found in a... like a 50 movie pack, and we just randomly put it on one day. And one scene just got in there, and it just, I think from there on, we became like obsessed with watching these movies and giving them all second chances. And sooner or later, we finally started doing this podcast, which virtually because of this movie. So we're finally doing this movie, finally seeing it for the second time. And we are, of course, talking about a movie with the tagline, a one-way ticket to hell and beyond. It's 1985's Night Train to Terror. Or as it should have been known, Scream Your Head Off, Death Wish Club, and Cataclysm. Otherwise known as the three unfinished films that were compiled into this anthology film that we're watching today. So, yeah.
Wait, these are all supposed to be separate films?
Oh, they are all separate films.
Stop it.
Yeah, there's three separate films, and they all exist. In fact, the first movie in this movie is called Scream Your Head Off. It was re-edited into The Case of Henry Billings. It was directed by James Carr. Death Wish Club, re-edited as The Case of Greta Connors. And Cataclysm, edited into The Case of Claire Hansen. Yeah. These are all movies that got butchered into this film. So they filmed a movie around it and stuck these movies into it.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
So these are real movies.
These are real movies.
Full feature length movies.
And this is the rare time that we've done a podcast where revisiting this movie, we didn't remember a damn thing except for, you want to take it away?
Dance with me, dance with me, dance with me, dance with me.
And now that we've seen it, everybody's got something to do except you. So dance with me, dance with me. Tears in the dining room, sorting through the news. Mama's at the shopping mall, buying new shoes. Everybody's got something to do. Everybody but you. Come on and dance with me, dance with me. All right, so the reason that that's stuck in our brains, now seeing it a second time, I know why. Because we hear it 4 times.
Is that all?
It starts with it
at intervals.
Every cut, it goes back to it. Even it starts with it and ends on it.
I feel like it's more. I guess maybe because, well, you know, I felt the need to purchase this DVD on its own.
Let's talk about why you were watching it. You bought it for me as a joke for Christmas.
Yeah, I felt like it needs to be a standalone DVD.
Nothing says Blu-ray special edition HD quality than Night Train to Terror. It still looks like shit. Everybody's got something to do. Everybody but you. It doesn't look any worse than I remember it looking in the 50 pack.
Yeah. Pay much for it anyway.
I got a fun fact. Do you want to know it now?
Yeah.
The DVD that you got me for Christmas actually contains the actual movie of one of these. It has a bonus on it of one of those movies.
I got my $2 worth.
I was about to say a minute ago, but I was going to say, I got my $2 worth. I was going to say to you, this is a rare occasion that would you be down for another month just revisiting the 3 movies that were actually in this movie?
Oh my God, I don't know if I can personally do it.
Because I feel like we're going to talk about this movie right now, and we have no clue how to talk about this movie.
I have no idea, but can I just go one further and say that if I watch those 3 films, I don't understand how I would possibly come to reconcile that in my head. Like the clips for the anthology parts in this movie were baffling enough. So how would they make feature length films out of all of these clips?
Well, okay, so the reason they're baffling is because they have been completely re-edited and repackaged to make a little segment in this movie. And as we're going to talk about, this movie, none of it makes any sense.
No, but the editor of this film should be fucking fired. I mean, how could you put all this crap in there, like, and not make it make sense? Like, a lot of it didn't make sense.
Oh, this movie is one of the craziest things I have ever watched. And if I don't know where this was put out, this wasn't put in a theater. I can't imagine it.
I think it was.
I don't think it could have been. I think that this might have been stuck on a shelf in like the video stores. And I feel anybody who ever watched this film, their brains must have melted.
Okay, well, let me just tell you the truth. As I was looking for my reviews for my segment, someone did say that they watched this come out in the theater. They watched it.
There's no way that's possible. In 1985, they watched this movie in a theater.
That's what that person said, yes. So I was like, oh my gosh.
I can't imagine that. I couldn't find any information about it being released. I mean, maybe I should have like really done a deep dive into trying to find out if this movie made money.
I'm going to go ahead and say no. But it says release date February 22nd, 1985. It doesn't really tell you the budget. It just basically tells you that, the release date.
I found information on this.
Oh, good. Okay.
The film was given, and this is from Wiki.
Okay.
You know, you can take that with a grain of salt, but yeah. I'm going to say it's true. The film was given a limited release theatrically by Visto International in 85, opening regionally in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Oh, okay. That's weird.
Yeah, so that's weird. I'm completely shocked.
I guess it didn't deserve the California red carpet treatment.
Oh my God.
Oh, gosh.
All right, so let's get into this movie because this is crazy and it's going to be very hard to talk about. And I don't know how good of a job I'm going to be able to do, but I'm going to try my best.
We're going to try. All we can start by saying is it's an anthology. So there are three
mini movies
stories that turned out to be actual movies that exist.
Yeah.
That are cut up on
more information
editing floor. And
yeah. This movie starts off with a train. We see a train and we get a weird music video clip show of, and now you, this is what made me laugh. I knew it didn't happen, but you had said it. Because we're watching a what looks like a music video happening inside of a train. Apparently, it's totally a room dress to pretend that it's a train, but it's the worst job you've ever seen.
It really is, yeah.
The band is singing that Dance With Me song. And we're watching an entire music video for this song, including the singer jumping in back and forth into new outfits.
That's why I thought that it was a music video because, you know, whenever you watch a 1980s music video with, like, you know, bands or, you know, groups, whatever, they cut different times in the series.
Yeah, you're waiting for this movie to say, like a director go, cut.
Right.
It does not happen. No. They're not filming a music video.
It seems like they are, but I mean, okay, we'll just pretend that this guy can switch clothes like magic. He looks like Eddie Redmayne, by the way.
I don't see it, but I like that you kept talking about it.
If they ever remade this movie, Eddie Redmayne.
That's what you said during the movie made me laugh. Remake this movie made me laugh my ass off.
You know what? I think they could, and I think they can make it better.
Oh, sure. They should make this the Shudder TV show.
Oh,
my God. Night Train to Terror TV show, where it's just the core concept of different episodes happening.
No, I would be here for it.
I know you would be. And every episode has to start with Dance With Me.
Yes, of course. That's the freaking song.
So we're seeing this band do this. And by the way, the reason I know this is a music video, because later on in one of the scenes, some of the band people, I don't know if they're groupies, I don't know who they are, but there's about 15 people in this band. And one of them says, like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, he kind of goes, "Wow. Oh, I wish our van wouldn't have broke down." And she's like, "I'm glad it did. This is groovy."
"Like, I really wish our bus hadn't broken down, you know?"
"No way. I think this train is cool."
"From the top."
Right? So we know that they have somehow been lured onto this train.
I mean, there's like a couple of guys in the band, but it's like mostly female, and even the drummer of the band is female, and the drummer,
you mean the girl hitting the one drum?
The one drum, yes, and I mean, she's drumming. So, like, everybody, all the chicks look like Bananarama. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm like, there's no semblance of what's going on here. They're just lip-syncing to this song. And it's over and over and over. So repetitive that you just can't get it out of your head. And
I like the person who is the singer of this band who is singing the song in this movie is credited as doing additional vocals on Little Mermaid. That made me laugh.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And also the writer of this song wrote, like, the music in Crybaby.
What?
I have no idea what's happening there.
Wait, that wasn't John Waters?
I don't know.
Come on, please, Mr. Jailer.
So, we see this band, and we find out that this train is actually the train to either hell or heaven. It's not really. This is actually a real train. It just so happens that on this train at this exact moment, they're using this train as kind of like a metaphor. Because this is really happening. This band is really playing, hanging out and on the train. It's really happening.
They seem to be the only passengers on the train.
The only other passengers are the weird ticket taker guys.
The conductor and the ticket taker. But like, there's no seats on this train. There's just a room where they're playing. The band is dancing.
And multiple, by the way, there's also a wooden breakdance floor at one point.
Yes.
And there's also the kids start talking from outside the windows.
And
like they're outside the train.
Looking inside the train.
Also fog machines.
There's fog machines. There's no seats at all on this train. And they're the only passengers, it seems.
It looks like, what's that old TV show where everybody kept popping up out of the windows? You know what I mean? Laughing. I know that's a really old reference.
Oh,
sorry.
Oh my God, you showed your age.
Laughing. Look
when
it
they
up.
Used to pop out
that's
of the
exactly what it
when they used
like.
To pop out of the lockers and yeah. can't do that on television.
That's also showing rage. Yeah. So what it turns out is happening is that the devil and Satan.
No.
The oh, devil, I'm sorry.
The devil is Satan.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. The reason I said that is because I guess I should start talking about some of the actors in this movie, because this movie stars Lou Cipher as Satan.
Oh, okay. I like it.
Lucifer.
Lucifer.
This is actually yes. in the credits. I'm not even making this up. That's actually in the end credits of this movie. And also it says God as himself.
Oh, nice.
But that's not true. It's actually like it. He's actually being played by Ferdy Main, who is actually in tons of movies.
Ferdy?
Yeah, Ferdy Main.
I feel like we know him. Yeah.
He's in so many things. There's actually a ton of people in here we know from a lot. And then if you go to the pictures, you don't know anybody else.
No, they're all out of the White Snake videos.
Oh, as we talk about. Well, the band, you don't know anybody.
Yeah. No.
So we see Satan and God, and they're on the train, and they're having a discussion. And the point of this movie is that the train is going to crash in an hour and a half, which is the runtime. And in an hour and a half, the train is going to crash, and everybody's going to die. And Satan wants that to happen, and God is, they're choosing, do people go to heaven or hell? And that's this whole movie. And they have cases like they're working in court and they're doing case. They're lawyers.
It's funny because they're sitting across from each other like they're playing chess or whatever, but they're not playing chess. It's just they're just sitting across from each other talking about who wants who.
Yeah.
You know,
with a movie projection screen right next to them. I'm sorry. Yeah. A movie projection screen right next to them outside the window of the train.
Yes. It was pretty funny.
And they do case files.
And they look like they're in space because it's space going by.
And also, it looks like they have a light table as their table.
Yeah. Like there would be like a chessboard or something there.
Well, it kind of reminded me of like when you trace, you do the tracing paper. If you're doing like
Or one of those projectors in high school that your teacher used to put the paper down on.
Scantron or something like that. Is that what it's called? Oh, not Scantron. Sure. Is that the, I don't know, whatever. Yeah. So they're debating cases and it's really pointless that Satan just wants the souls to go to hell and he wants everybody to go to hell. And God is like trying to talk him into maybe, you know, not so much. That's the point of this movie.
And I guess we should start on like a story by story basis and just try to explain. So this is the one that confuses me the most out of all of them.
Okay. Yeah. I got some information on this.
And I would love to hear it because the bottom line here is that.
This is the case of Henry Billings.
Oh, I thought his name was Harry. Okay. Henry. Okay.
Is it?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. So. Tell me all about this story, because none of this story made sense. It took forever for us to grasp what was happening here. There's a lot of craziness going on.
It's going to be very, very hard to talk about. This is probably the one that, and I cannot believe they started the movie with it, because it is, you're right, it is Harry Billings.
So Harry Billings, right? So they made a whole, like you said, a whole movie based on this.
Okay, so here's some great information.
I'm shocked. I need information.
The case of Harry Billings exists in three movies, Joe. This movie, of course, Night Train to Terror. Then there's a movie called Scream Your Head Off, which the producers took the filmed footage that the director had worked on. He was working on a couple films, and then he left the U.S. and went to England to take some time off. When he came back, he was shocked to find out that the producers took the movie footage that he filmed and made more footage and stuck it together and made a movie.
Oh my God.
So after that, after years go by, he decided to finally finish his film. So then he released a movie called Marilyn Behind Bars.
What?
And this was his original version of the film. The actor actually came back. Okay, so that is three versions of this movie that exist. And so what the footage that he had filmed, they took it into this movie and then they had to film more footage. So an actor keeps changing his hair, his shirt, his arm hair.
That happens so much.
And there's new scenes filmed. It's all because they rushed it in to make more make sense. It still doesn't make any sense. They do such a sloppy job of it.
They tried to make it make sense, but they, I mean, honestly, I could not understand half of what was going on in this first story.
Yeah, so now if this is a case about God and Satan trying to debate, does this person go to hell or heaven? It's confusing as to what exactly is the story here that they're debating. Because what we find out is in the opening shot, there is a woman in a bridal gown. Right? She's not a bridal gown, but like a wedding dress. And they're in a car.
That is a bridal gown.
Okay. I didn't know if that's what you call it.
Have you gotten married before?
No, I have, but I haven't worn a gown. I thought maybe the...
What was it called that I wore then?
A wedding dress. Is it a difference?
No.
I thought maybe the bridal gown was the bridesmaids.
No, those are bridesmaids' gowns.
Fuck. Who the hell knows? They're not curtains.
You want to go get married again?
They're not curtains, Joe.
Let's do it all over again.
They're silk sheets.
Let's go get married again. We'll start all over. Let's start again.
Well, you've already been married twice, so we can get married a third time.
What was the dress that I wore for the second wedding for our vow renewal?
I bought you a nice polka dot.
It was fucking gorgeous.
Rockabilly dress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what it's called, a dress?
I would think that was a dress.
Okay, good. Okay, just checking.
What do you think? Whatever. It doesn't matter. So the wedding dress.
Oh my God.
She's in a car and the car is shifting. And it's so funny to watch. This actress is just like, whoa.
Okay, can we talk about the car? It's a Matchbox car. It's not real, right?
It's a real car. It's
sped up big time. They sped up the
footage.
And
also they shrank, they used the film. So it wasn't in like widescreen. It was in like, what's that, full screen or whatever, like, so it shrank and squished the car, so it looked even worse.
The car looked like an eraser, you know, like that you get like at the carnival.
Yeah.
Like one of those little erasers. It was so tiny, but in the close-up shot, she was in the car with her husband
any,
driving.
Any shots outside the car, she's not there.
Yeah, but any shots that are far away, there's nobody in the car. I didn't even see him.
You can see a driver.
But I couldn't even see him. I was like, oh my God, what
But it's
this?
So funny because the car's just whipping and she's just like going back and forth and she looks over and there's a guy driving the car like crazy and he just glances at her. And then she finally says, hey, honey, can you take it slow?
Harry, you're driving too fast.
You're going too fast.
I mean, if I was in this, you have to see how fast this car was going. It was, and he was swerving all over the road. I would have been screaming my head off.
Yeah.
In terror.
Oh,
terror.
And their narration kicks in, and it doesn't sound like either of the actors playing Satan or I don't know who
or
the
God.
Actor is.
No,
doing
I
yet.
Don't know.
I don't know if it's supposed to be the ticket taker guy who is working for Satan. Apparently, I don't know who's doing the narration, but he says virtually this is his wedding night. Harry's wedding night, right? And so
then why is he driving like a maniac?
I don't know either.
Why isn't he in the honeymoon suite?
He crashes the car off the pier and they now tell us that he is now in a psychiatry ward in a hospital, like an asylum, and that his wife had died on impact and now he is being like I guess in the hospital, but the hospital is just him being given electrotherapy.
What's weird about this whole thing is that for the first 5-10 minutes of this situation, we see him given electrotherapy and we see like other patients in this mental hospital. But like we have there's like not one inkling of what is going on here. It's just so bizarre. But we see Richard Mall.
Yeah, well, I wanted to ask you before you mentioned Richard Mall. Are you not going to talk about the actor who plays Harry?
Who is he?
Oh, Joe. How do you not know? It's Pygar.
Shut up. It's Pygar?
Of the what was it? The Pygar, the one?
Of the tribe.
I'm Pygar. We're talking about our previous episode of Barbarella that we were forced to watch. Previously on Just Another Movie Night. Who is named
Pygar.
Pygar.
Now,
who is a blind angel.
The last of the Enesepticosynes.
I'm Pygar, the last of the ornithanthropes.
And now back to your regularly scheduled program.
Wait, what is the name of the fucking tribe?
I don't remember. Anthrisotropes. It's like angels. But
I must have said it wrong 16 times in that podcast.
I just liked all the fake versions. Yeah, it was Pygar. So yeah, Pygar is being electrocuted. Wow. And what I love is the next shot, though, is a naked woman also. And by the way, Pygar is saying he can't get out of his straps. And his hands are just tucked in.
I mean,
he can just pull them out.
I don't understand what's happening here.
Yeah.
Like, he's under some kind of, like, they're holding him there. But how, okay, the whole point of this segment is that the doctor, who's a female, is controlling him somehow to...
I wish he wouldn't, I wish he wouldn't jump so forward, because we don't find that out until the very end of this segment.
Yeah, but, well, it took, fucking forever for us to figure this out.
There's so many things in there to talk about that are baffling.
None of it makes any sense. Yeah. That's why I'm like, how could I even talk about this and sound like a sensible, rational human being?
Well, we're not supposed to. That's the whole point of this. It's supposed to be our pain, our suffering.
I'm suffering. All right.
Well, they cut to a naked woman and Richard Mull in a black wife beater, right? Tucked in. And he is just, by the way, Richard Mull, if anybody doesn't know, is Bull on Night Court or the voice of Harvey Dent and Two-Face on the animated Batman show.
Nerd.
Hey, he's amazing on that show.
Get the money.
Hey, look at this. Must be a couple of hundred silver dollars.
Bring it.
I'll take that.
Jewelry wasn't part of the plan. We gotta flip for it.
What?
Good side. Leave it.
But Two-Face.
I said leave it.
So he is just out of his damn mind in this film. And he is torturing or killing these women. But we don't know why, because there seems to be two doctors in charge of this whole place.
Yeah.
And we don't know. They seem like they're almost cutting people up or doing crazy surgeries. And as we see, as it goes on, that's exactly what's happening. Richard Mull, I guess we should say this, Pygar gets out of, because we start seeing segments of him going and picking up women randomly through different places by drugging their drinks. Like, we go to church, which we couldn't stop laughing about. He goes to church and he like pushes a woman out into the aisle to stand next to this other girl. And then when they get the wine, you know, the blood of Christ or whatever, he drops a pill in there, I guess. But the woman looks like she knows that he drugged her.
Seems like she's on to him. And yeah, she's fine with it.
And the next scene, she's being cut up in the place by Richard Mull.
It's weird. So we don't understand, though, why he is doing this.
Yeah, and they keep doing it because he picks up a woman at a bar. He drugs her drink clearly in front of another man and then buys that man drinks. And then that man shows up and he's like a cop. But he didn't do anything about it at the time.
No, it's very bizarre.
The bartender is a woman. She goes missing. He brings her there. And they keep doing this. They just keep seeing women that he picks up and kills.
Okay, so he came into this insane asylum basically because his wife had died when he was driving like a lunatic.
We don't know why, by the way.
Yeah, so now he is recruited by the doctors in this psychiatric facility.
And you say recruited. He's just being electrocuted, and then all of a sudden we see the doctor having sex with him.
Okay, forced to bring these victims back to the psychiatric hospital so they could be hacked up and their organs can be shipped off for sale.
Yeah, and we get funny ass scenes of what you can tell was filmed after the fact. If this movie was like filmed in 1980, you can see in 1985 someone had to do the stand-ins for Richard Mull. So they're like having a bad hair, they have totally different arms, but we're also seeing cheaper budgeted gore. like we're just seeing funny ass body parts on walls. There's a scene where a girl's getting cut up and she's just screaming over and over and over and over, although she would have died so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, he was hacking up all of her limbs and she's still screaming, and we're just like, okay, she would have died already.
The camera leaves.
Stupid.
The camera leaves into the background. We see all the organs, and what's funny is nobody else is doing this. It's just Richard Mull. We don't even see Richard Mull interact with the two doctors that are involved in doing this. Apparently what they're doing is packaging up body parts and sending them off, and they're making money for like organs and stuff.
It's
like
organ harvesting.
Yeah, but there's heads in jars and there's like feet. It doesn't make any sense why they're doing, you know, why they're doing it, how they're doing it. And well, you don't see anybody's working with him. He's just cutting up a body, and we see like someone has put boxes onto a conveyor belt, but there is nobody else
there.
But the funny thing is you can see the whole camera crew in almost the entire shot. But the worst part is when the camera finally goes back into the room where he's cutting up the woman, you can see a crew member is stuck in the background and tries to scoot out of shot.
Oh my God, by it's moving so funny. His feet. You had to rewind it for me because I love film flubs. I love
this is one of the worst film I've ever seen.
And I didn't see that at the time because I was too busy looking at the woman that was bleeding all over the place.
Yeah, because she's just hanging there.
She's hanging there, and then I see feet. You're like, look at the feet. There's feet right there. Yeah, this guy can't get out of the shot.
When we say feet, entire legs.
Yeah, whole legs. I was like, oh my God, that is bad.
And this is the kind of movie we're talking about. I mean, literally, this doesn't make sense. But we find out that, Pygar, which is what I'm going to call him, it doesn't matter. Pygar is being drugged, or somehow he was electrocuted. But the doctor now kills her partner doctor by drugging his champagne. And he drinks it, which is the cloudiest champagne you've ever seen in your life. He just sips on.
Everybody's very trusting in this movie.
Very trusting. And she stands there and stares at him, and he does at least 10 double takes, which is so fun. He looks at the champagne after he drank it, looks at her, looks at that champagne, looks at her again, and he's like, wait a minute.
This movie could have been cut by 10 minutes.
Something's foul here. So he dies, and she does brain surgery on him, but doesn't kill him and use his organs.
Yeah, that's weird. She lobotomizes him. She says I'm going to lobotomize you finally.
Yeah, and you can tell in the film that this actually came from, there probably was a couple other orderlies, because in the next shot, we see the doctor and an orderly have been lobotomized playing chess. Mm-hmm. And that's strange, because who wouldn't come to the asylum looking for this doctor?
Right.
Oh, by the way, one of the best sequences in this sequence is that a newlywed couple just shows up at the asylum going, can we use your phone? Now, there's like a billion places. And Richard Mull opens the door. Now, he looks like a complete psychopath.
He does.
And they go, can we use your phone? And he goes, there's phones all along the highway. And then he goes, sure, come in.
Well, it's like a Brad and Janet moment.
It totally is.
Goddamn, Riff Raff opens a fucking door.
Who goes in?
Riff Raff opens the door, I am turning around and walking home in the rain.
I would have done one of those Stewie moments where you're slowly looking at you, like my head's tilting, and then we're backing up.
I'd be like, nice house. Oh my gosh, this is probably haunted. And then he opens the door, and I'd have been like, nope.
We'll have to have a phone here that'll let us use.
Sorry to bother you this time of night. We're lost. Do you have a phone we could use?
Hey, there's payphones on the highway.
We stupidly didn't bring any change.
Come on in.
I guess we should also talk about the interior, about the hospital, because when the newlywed couple goes in, there's like a fancy staircase, and it looks like, I mean, this
might be a mansion.
It might be the asylum from Resident Evil, because it's like all of a sudden there's a science lab right behind the beautiful, house.
Yeah, it looks like a mansion, and then like upstairs is like the rooms. I don't even know.
I don't know either.
How they're even rationalizing.
And sometimes
this.
When they show the like a character runs around the hospital trying to escape at one point, they go from hospital room to complete house to hospital room.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I don't know where this is.
This psychiatric hospital is not very hard to escape from.
No. So now that the doctor has killed her partner, or lobotomized her partner, to be with Pygar, Pygar's like, I'm not a part of this.
Pygar.
And my favorite part is they have a scene where she's like, I did it all for you, and now we're going to be partners, and you can keep bringing me broads. And then he goes, I don't want to. I want to have a normal life. And she goes, where am I in that normal life, right? And then the next shot, it's him fighting her off. It's like had no connection to that scene.
And he's like, I want nothing to do with you, bitch.
Yeah. And he fights her off and throws her into a room, and it lets the old doctor and the orderly that were lobotomized go do surgery on her.
Oh, they cut her up big time.
While Pygar fights Richard Mole.
Which is funny because his arms no longer look like a Sasquatch.
Yeah.
They stunt double or something.
Yeah, now it's like Richard Mole's arms. He doesn't have Sasquatch arms.
No, he doesn't have Sasquatch arms. It's the other
stand-in actor. And Pygar, he's saying that he is now not in her trance, that he had her in a trance, and he's going to go save all the women that are there. But when he goes in the room to save the women, he just stares at them and then leaves.
I know. I was like, wait, wasn't he supposed to unstrap them and take
something? He just kind of looked at them and went, ain't worth anybody. It. There's too many.
So this whole story was about him and whether God was taking him or the devil was taking him, correct?
Yes.
So at the end, he didn't save anyone but himself.
Yeah, and then he kills Richard Mole, which is, well, we got to talk about that. We got to talk about it. Richard Mole. And him have a big fight. And he falls to the floor and smashes the table. And then he gets a scalpel. And Richard Mole comes over him with to stab him with like a pole. But all he does is scalpel his midsection. And Richard Mole's just like, I can't do anything. I give up on life. But he doesn't give up on life enough because Pygar is able to run into a room. Now he goes now into the house. From the hospital hallway.
It would have been cool to see the guts spew out.
Well, what we do get to see is Richard Mole now goes, you know what? I could do something again. I'm going to go after him still. So he comes in the doorway. And now Pygar somehow has found a machete. One of the best tools that you can find in a hospital.
In a psychiatric hospital. They exist, you know.
I guess we should have pointed out when he's cutting up that one woman, Richard Mole, there is spatula shadows.
There's every kitchen utensil and like, a ladle hanging from the
goddamn. It was one of those potato mashers.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is going on? But yeah, he finds a machete. And Richard Mole just goes, shit, basically, and just screams. And he cuts his head off.
Yeah, it's pretty epic.
The funniest gore sequence ever.
Now, I don't know, did God make a decision on whether or not he's worthy?
So God says that it isn't his fault that he was forced into being this thing and he shouldn't suffer for it. And he's like, and the devil's like, no, well, you know, he look at all the bad things he did. He didn't really do anything. He didn't help anybody.
He didn't.
And then the God's like, it shouldn't be on him. I choose he goes to heaven. And then, they actually don't come up with a decision because the guy comes in and goes, maybe you should have 100 years in purgatory.
That's right.
And then God's like, all right. But the devil goes, I get all the doctors and I get Richard Mole.
Yeah. So they're having like a little like powwow of who gets who. But I think that the 100 years in purgatory for Harry, I think that's excessive.
Well, we got to talk about this before he even went to the psychiatry ward and obviously went under her trance. He already was a drunk driving lunatic that killed his wife on his wedding day.
He really was. You know what? Maybe that is a fitting punishment for him.
We don't even know what happened there.
In purgatory. Yeah. So, I mean, I think this is the only one that's not, like, it's, like, up in the air, right?
All of these are baffling. Even the devil's baffled by every choice that God makes.
Well, okay, so Harry gets 100 years in purgatory.
And then we get dance with me
scene of the same exact people, like, that all look like Bananarama and Eddie Redmayne, and they're just dancing doing the same shit, except we get like a 5-minute sequence of the guy, the main singer, breakdancing, which is kind of cool. I like dancing. So I like that.
Yeah, I didn't know if that one happened after this next story or if it's between these
It
two.
Happened though, Scott. You know, it happened.
And by the way, it's bad, right? It's one of the worst. It looked like a ray gun from the Olympics. I don't even know what's happening.
He's it wasn't just as spinning. Bad as her.
And by the way, the camera can't shoot breakdancing, so it keeps like shooting his crotch.
Okay, I noticed that too, and I was like, all right, I'm waiting for the ball flop, but yes. I didn't. I just can't.
Okay, so the next story we have is, and by the way, this one is, the movie is called Death Wish Club. It has,
this one I found very bizarre.
Death Wish Club, this one's called The Case of Greta Connors. Now, I don't know which one's more baffling, this one or the first one.
I mean, I think this one is more baffling because I didn't understand, like, what the hell is this?
So story is that Greta Connors is a working, she's a carny. She sells popcorn at a carnival. And a guy comes up to her and is like, you know what? I don't want your popcorn, but I'm going to buy you. So he starts sticking money in her bra or like her shirt. And he keeps giving her so many hundreds that he finally takes the popcorn and throws it. And he's like, come with me. So she does. And we get a narration now that they have become a couple and that he is rich and famous and that he uses her.
It should be noted, though, that she wants to become a singer.
Yeah, they say singer or actor.
She plays piano. So she wants to become something. So she sees this old man throwing money down her shirt, literally. And she's like, ooh, what can you do for me?
Yeah, and he's like, I'll make you a star, baby. And he puts her in porn. Right? And we get a porno. What it's like, it's so baffling.
It looks like Assault and Battery.
It does. It's like a violent porno where it looks like... Davy Crockett comes in and like has his way with her in her cabin.
Yeah, he's dressed like a pirate. He looked like a pirate or something.
The raccoon hat.
Either way, he looked like a dirty vagrant. And
he looked like a fur trapper from Cannibal the Musical. Now the funniest part is this is being watched at a party in a bar. But the confusing part of this scene is. The porno is taking place in what looks like a wood cabin. And then when we see people watching it, it's in a wood cabin. So I thought this was the camera crew or people just watching it live on stage. That's what I thought
too. And then they showed that there's a bar back there. So like people...
I was like, what is happening?
It's like a whole group of men with a movie projector watching her have, assault and battery with, Davy Crockett or whatever.
What we find out is a guy... is invited to this party by their friends to get drunk and watch a porno together.
This is Glenn Marshall, college graduate enrolled in medical school. He stopped by his fraternity house for a beer one day, a day that would change his life. He saw Greta in one of Young Meyer's movies. It was love at first sight. Glenn had to find her.
And the guy falls in love with the actress in the movie.
Do guys do that? Do guys sit around and watch pornos together?
I feel that that's uncomfortable to watch a porno. Have you ever watched a movie where it had like a heavy sex scene? Oh, yeah. We do with our friends every Monday night.
Yeah.
We put on bad movies, and that's a staple in bad movies.
It is, but however, I never would imagine, I've never known anyone, I mean, they never told me, but any guy that sits in a room with eight other guys and just watches porn together, I feel like that would turn into some sort of, like, orgy.
Or something worse. It makes me think of the actor from, like, Hogan's Heroes, right? He was famously killed. He would do that with the guy who ended up killing him. He would watch pornos with that guy.
Yeah, what's his name? Chuck Barris?
Yeah.
That's him?
Is it? No.
Gong Show?
No, not him.
No?
No, Chuck Barris was the guy.
Oh, he was lived a CIA. For a while.
Yeah, he said he was a CIA agent.
Oh. I don't know.
He played Hogan on Hogan's Heroes. Yeah.
I don't see any guys that we've ever known in our lives watching porn together unless there was going to be some sort of like intimacy happening.
I will say that I've known some people that they'll show me their phone and go, look at this. And there's like... porn on it, and it's like, this is awkward. I've had that experience a few times.
I mean, yeah, but that's not the same as sitting in a room with a group of guys.
No, I would leave. I don't even want to go to strip clubs, let alone watch porno with a bunch of friends.
Yeah, it's just bizarre.
That's weird. And there's like a dorky guy eating a whole pizza and going, whoa, in the background. And they just show all these crazy friends at this bar. I don't know what's happening. It doesn't even seem like a friend's house. It's like a bar.
It literally is a bar with a projector in it and a freaking lazy boy couch, sofa, whatever. I'm like, what is happening here? What is this?
Well, the point really
is... it looks
like
someone's man cave, like the basement of a man cave.
It does. The point really is, though, that this guy falls in love with the actress in the porno, which is Greta. And the narration says that he would do anything to find her and be with her. Stalker. Weird. Right? And he is our hero. That is strange.
That's mind-boggling.
He goes and finds her. The next scene, He just goes to a bar, a nightclub, where she's playing piano. Why would a porno star be singing and playing piano? And if you listen really closely, you can actually hear her hit the keys bad at one point. It made me laugh.
Yes, but also, how would he even know where she lives or where what vicinity to find her in? He goes into a random place. This is without the internet. There. Yeah. This is in the 80s, like the 1980s, before there's even cell phones, pagers. Only doctors had them. Even if they had him back then, you know, there's no technology back
then.
He
does it. And I guess this is enough for her to be fall in love with him, because they move in together instantly. And the next shot is him bringing her the mail.
It's so weird. Like, they instantaneously locked eyes and they were already moving in together. Yeah. I'm like, wait, something happened. What happened?
Yeah, that's not even the weirdest thing. It gets crazy. So I guess that guy who was her original boyfriend, the rich guy, is jealous and sees that they're happy and together, and he wants to do anything he can to destroy their happiness. So he invites this guy.
This is the old guy that made her a porn star.
Yeah, and he actually flashes. He looks at his watch and some jewelry, and she just, like, lets go of her boyfriend's hand.
Mm-hmm.
And the next shot, we're told that he invites them to this death club. So it's like a club of people that get together.
Bunch of
and
weirdos.
They're virtually playing Russian roulette constantly. They're putting their lives in jeopardy. And that's for fun. All right. And so now this is one of the funny ass things that you can imagine. They have what they claim is a beetle, but it is a giant clay animation wasp.
Now, what is the significance of this thing? It can kill you with just
one bite from this thing will kill you instantly. And so what they wanted to do is they wanted to release the jar. Now, it's gigantic. It's the size of an arm.
Okay, it looks like a wasp anyway.
A beetle, which made us laugh.
It's ridiculous.
Well, they let it loose in the room. And by the way, there's a group of people we have meet in this room. One of the guys is clearly Jimi Hendrix. And I know this is true, because later on he actually quotes Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, he does.
And so I'm baffled by what's happening, and I want to see this movie very badly, the one that this got from. Because this movie looks hilarious.
Oh, my God.
The bee, the wasp flies around the room, and it's, like, tempting to land on them. They're all like, don't move, don't speak, let it land on one of us. And I have a window open.
They're all excited about it, though. Like, it's going to land on and sting them, and they're going to die, and they're, like, excited about it.
I should have said there's another woman, there's the rich guy, there is Greta, her boyfriend, and there's also another gentleman who is the worst overdubbed German accent, or some kind. He sounds like Borat. It's terrible.
Shut up. The process is irreversible. Once it is started, it cannot be stopped. So just shut up.
And they're threatening them. They said, it's going to circle the room. It might bite one of us, or it might fly out the window. And then the boyfriend is like, great, so it can kill someone else. Like, you're going to let it kill some random stranger.
That's the thrill for these assholes.
So it goes around the room and lands on a bunch of them. We got to see the boyfriend's fake clay animation hand get landed on.
It's funny.
And then it decides to fly out the window. And now, this is amazing. It flies and finds a couple having sex in the park or something on the floor in the grass.
This is a crazy scene. Crazy. Yeah,
crazy.
So they're having sex on the grass or whatever, and this thing lands on the guy's face.
It lands right on his face while the girl's riding him, and he doesn't see it at first for some reason. His eyes are closed.
How?
I don't know.
The size of a freaking torso.
It's huge. It made me think of the movie Caveman with Ringo Starr. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It lands on his face.
The mosquito.
Yeah, the huge, huge mosquito. It lands on his face and bites his cheek. And then it flies off, and his face explodes onto the other girl's face.
That was insane.
Yeah.
It was insane. So
we were like, oh, my God.
I thought that we were going to get more scenes of the bug literally killing people.
No.
But we only got that one.
Because we're moving on, because it wasn't successful. The boyfriend didn't die from the beetle.
Right.
So this guy's like trying to kill her off. Now, we start getting sequences of this insanity to the point where he doesn't want to have anything to do with Greta anymore. And he is forced at gunpoint to keep doing these games with them, apparently. Mm-hmm. Now, the next game we get at gunpoint is where they all have to sit in electric chairs. and they all have to strap their thing, and there's a supercomputer that selects randomly one of them to get electrocuted by this thing.
I am the Contessa's electrocution computer. When I light yellow, a mild electrical shock will discharge to one of the club members. When I light blue, I will emit a stronger shock to one of you. And when I light red, that is the ultimate. Now the Contessa is ready to throw the final switch that will begin our game of death. Good luck.
Now, the guy who is the one that wants him dead isn't even there.
Nope.
But here's the crazy part. Greta doesn't seem to be there either. Instead, there is a psychopathic Pee Wee Herman-esque person in a suit and tie and bow tie and red cummerbund and all this stuff.
It was so weird because I was like, wait a minute, what is happening?
But I think it is Greta.
It's not Greta, because Greta was sitting next to the old man who was...
She's not in the sequence.
She was on the couch with him. She was. And the next
scene.
There's
no couch. Oh, in the next scene, yes, they come back and they're normal again. It's so weird.
But then the person that was sitting next to Harry or whatever his name was, he didn't... She had no hair. She had no hair.
She has short boy hair, but it is a woman with blue eyes.
But didn't look anything like Greta.
Well, whatever. I don't know what's happening because he leans over. She says, aren't you excited? Aren't you... Whatever.
She's a psychopath.
And he says, I hope it lands on you. Because this way I can get away from you and have you out of my life forever.
Which makes me think it is Greta. But it's clearly not Greta. She doesn't want to play these games.
I don't know.
This psychopath with the bow tie wanted to.
I don't know what's happening in
this scene. This one blew my mind. I have no idea.
And the best moment happens is when the supercomputer sets it off. And it ends up on Jimi Hendrix. And Jimi Hendrix says... Excuse me while I smoke.
So he knew that it had landed on him and that he was going to fry up. And that was his last line.
He said something before I couldn't make out. But it was like he was quoting Jimi Hendrix. And he turns it into a sock puppet monstrosity being electrocuted. And it goes on forever. And it is... straight up hilarious. It's like a cartoon character.
After he got electrocuted, his corpse looked like a wax candle that they just put hair on.
Yes. And to see the dummy or whatever they're burning with the teeth, it is so funny to watch.
They implanted some chiclets in burnt like wax.
It looked like real teeth. I don't know how to explain it, but they could have easily bought next level,
shitty dentures and popped them in there. But that looked like a wax candle. It was hysterical with hair.
Yeah. So the next game is they have a giant wrecking ball hanging above the ceiling. They're all going to lay down in sleeping bags.
Under this ball.
Under this ball while it rocks and goes in a circle around them. But every time it goes in a circle, there's a weed, like a cutter up in the air.
It's like a saw.
Yeah.
And it's cutting the rope slowly every time it goes around. So it could fall on any one of them and crush them to death.
Yeah.
So it finally falls down.
On a woman. The woman.
We don't even get to see it.
It just, she goes, and it hits her head.
That's the end of it.
And guess what? Finn.
That's the end of the whole thing.
I don't understand this.
There was no reasoning. And they cut back. Don't they cut back to God and the devil?
Yeah.
Did they even say which one of those people is going to hell?
Yeah. They're basically saying it's not really Greta's fault. And I'm like, it is. She's a piece of crap.
It is though, because she, got in bed with this freaking loony old man that was shoving $100 bills down her freaking shirt.
And then she got in bed with a stalker.
And she got in bed with a stalker. Who's our main character
apparently of that sequence. And I think it's I don't think he dies. They don't show anything. There is no end to the scene.
Well, what happens with her porn career?
What happened to him?
Right. What happened?
Did he get away from them?
Right. I have so many questions about this.
I don't understand that one at all.
Do they each get picked off one by one in the game? But
I know. There must be more to it.
There has to be more to it. There has to be.
I have no clue.
That's the movie that I would want to watch because I need some answers.
Finish her story, conductor. Greta went off with a nice young man and lived happily ever after. Isn't that a nice story? Don't look so sad, my friend.
You've still got Youngmeyer and all the rest of them.
But I wanted Greta.
Forget it. You can't have her.
Well, it doesn't matter, Joe, because dance with me, dance with me.
Yeah, that happens again. So we see another scene of not Eddie Redmayne lip syncing with his Whitesnake groupies and dancing around in this not a train.
Okay, so now we're on to the last segment, which is the case of Claire Hansen. All right, the case of Claire Hansen is originally was Cataclysm. That was the name of the movie. There was also really funny other titles for this film, like Satan's Flatulence or something like that. I just read some funny ass stuff.
That's
on this
a
one.
Really good band name.
There you go.
Satan's Flatulence.
This segment actually gave us a bunch of band names we couldn't stop talking about.
That's what comes out of you when you eat Mexican food.
Like, it doesn't come out of you.
Oh, hardcore.
Yeah. I like how you went for me for that.
Well, you know, you're always the one first. Then I come in later on. My stomach takes a little bit longer to kick.
Okay. This should be the stuff that we absolutely love. This one is really weird, but it's at least more understand. Like, you can get it. It makes more sense.
I don't know what you're even talking about. You can get it.
This one, you can get. The other two don't make any sense whatsoever. No. What's going on?
This one doesn't make any sense either.
This one is, I think, straightforward enough. It's about a wife and her husband writes a book. Now, if this is, she's supposed to be the main character because it's the case of her. She's hardly the main character of the storyline. She only has like some bits here and there that are important. And she has the ending and the beginning, I guess. She wakes up from a dream, and it's a dream about, like, the end of the world or whatever. And it turns out that her husband, who is played by Richard Mole in a terrible wig.
Oh, my God.
Again, I don't know why he's in another one.
Okay, this wig, why?
I don't know.
What was the reasoning on this?
Don't know.
It clearly looks like they tried to make him look like an old man.
He looks like Jason Blood. I know. I don't even know.
Terrible.
Who, yeah, what is this? So he has written a book. And by the way, he is a... Nobel Prize winner. He is rich and famous. He wrote a book called God is Dead. And the whole point of the book is that he has discovered that none of the religious stuff that we know of is true and it's all fake. And so if we should live in a society where there are no gods. And, you know, I don't know what his goal is besides that. He says it all in such a dark manner, such like a, like, it's so odd. I don't know what his end goal would be for the world. He does it in a way where there is no hope. So it's bizarre. And he's going to release this book. And so it's kind of like starting off this whole thing. But you would think that that would be the main thing. But we cut to a whole nother bunch of characters. So we cut to an old man. We actually start, I don't even understand, there's a scene where we cut back to the Nazi regime where
it's World War
Nazis come in and kill an entire band of people playing instruments on a stage. They kill all these people because of a debt. And we don't really know whose debt it is. We don't know anything about it. But we cut to an old man, and this old man is watching television. And on television, the guy who was the Nazi...
Mm-hmm.
That killed those band members is still the same age, and he's being interviewed on camera talking about some concert they're at. I don't really know what's going on there. This guy looks like a deflated meatloaf. You know, like the musician meatloaf? He looks like him with all the air and the fat sucked out of him, and he's just like what he would look like normally. But he's also got a painted face. It's like white painted. And he's got like, oh, his eyebrows are completely like stenciled in.
He looks like he stepped like literally right out of like a music video.
Yes.
Like, it's crazy.
He looks amazing. But the old man freaks out. That's the guy who killed my family.
Yeah. Right? So during World War II, his family got killed.
We don't know if they're the musicians in the. We have no idea.
By the Germans.
Doesn't matter, I guess. But he has paint clippings all over his walls of Nazis, right? And he is like trying to find them. So he runs out to the hallway and starts banging on his neighbor's door. And then the neighbor isn't in there because he's walking up, and it is legendary bad movie all star. Cameron Mitchell. This is the first Cameron Mitchell movie we've done on this podcast. Can you believe that?
That can't be right.
It's true. First Cameron Mitchell movie on his podcast.
Cameron Mitchell is like, okay, he's a national treasure in this house.
He is something else.
He is this next level, so bad, he's phenomenal.
He's amazing. And he shows up, and again, you know, he finds a way to use, like, say, son of a bitch or something like that. He always does in every scene, every movie he's ever done.
He's yelling. He's a good yeller.
He's very calm in this one.
He is very, he's very tame.
Calmer than, he's probably not plastered like he normally is in later movies. He still smokes, chain smoking, and still sings, son of a bitch. But he, the guy's freaking out. He says, come in here. I found him. I found the guy who killed my family. Mm-hmm. We have to head out there now. And he's like, look, I'm just a local cop. I don't have Jared. We have to go. So he pulls him in the car and they drive over to where this thing was being filmed. It so happens that the thing that was being filmed is right down the block, apparently. So they drive over there and he sees him. He's like, that's the guy. And he's like, okay, now we see him and we can follow him. Okay, that's where he lives. And it's this amazing house, by the way.
Yeah, it's looks amazing. Like a museum. It's gorgeous.
Crazy looking.
It's really nice.
Now we know, but I can't arrest him. You got to understand.
He doesn't have probable cause to arrest this guy.
It was so many years ago. It's 40 years ago, and it was a different country, and I have no say. And he's like, and also, the guy hasn't aged a day in 40 years. How could he be the guy?
Right. So Cameron Mitchell's looking at all these clippings on this old man's wall, which, by the way, I made mention to
we should talk about it. There's 18.
There's about, I don't know, 20, 25 different clippings, news clippings. I don't know about you, but in World War II, did they take close-up photos of random Nazis?
Yeah, because there's like a bunch of photos. I don't think that's so stretched. It's the 1871 that he had on his wall. Remember that?
We were like, yes.
Wait, does he have a picture of newspaper from 1871?
It was very clear as it was taken by like a Kodak.
Yeah, and what I love about that clipping, it was clipped out like we used to do with this on Sunday Funnies.
Yes.
And like stuck on the wall. So it's like, that's from 1870-something?
Yeah.
And you're just cutting it with scissors and it's sticking on a wall.
Yeah, like, I'm pretty sure logic would dictate that would be disintegrated.
It probably would have disintegrated. Yeah. Yeah. He's like, I don't know what I can do about it. Well, the old man's like, well, I'm going to do something about it. And right about now, you might be asking yourself, what about the woman and her husband who wrote the book? We don't understand it either. But what's going on is we're following this old man to go kill this guy at his house. So he breaks in the house to go kill this guy that he thinks is the Nazi. When he opens up a curtain, a giant monster puppet pops out, and this guy, it's clearly another person with a wig, the chest explodes out. And that's it.
This is the part of this segment that I thought we were dealing with a Nazi vampire.
Yeah, it's like it's a demon. Yeah.
So I thought he was a vampire. I mean, look at him. He mm-hmm. He's pale.
Yeah.
He looks like Steve Perry from Journey in 1980 with that hair, the feathered hair. He just looked like a vampire. So I was like, oh, okay, this is gonna be cool. This is gonna be like a maybe the only horror-esque segment that we really get.
Oh well, all of them have been.
I mean, a touch of it, but the second major.
One, not so much, except for the funny deaths. But the first one with all the cutting up people and all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, it had a little bit of an element there, but
this one goes for it. This one goes hard for
this one.
This one's insane. Now that guy's killed, but now here in the weirdest thing, his body has shown up in a parking lot, apparently bruised and now tattooed with 666 on it.
It's the devil's kiss, Scott.
But he had his chest punched through. And they're like, whoever hit him had insane strength. So mm-hmm. It's all bruised. And now Cameron Mitchell's like, shit, something's up.
Yeah. And this guy just told me about this guy that doesn't age. And, I went in to investigate. And now this guy's dead?
Yeah. Huh. And I guess we should point out that he also has another cop that works with him, which is... I would say, now the funniest thing is, I know this actor from so many things.
You do?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
First of all, why is it always the cops that are like 108 years old? You know, Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. Well, this actor was 70 at the time of filming this movie.
Jesus.
He lived to 95. He is named Mark Lawrence. He is AKA the old timer at the hotel in Dusk Till Dawn. You know, get me a room, old bastard. You know that?
Oh, he's like, wow. All right.
Well, no, but you should know him from another movie.
I recognize
one that we did on this podcast.
What is it?
He's the villain in your favorite movie, Joe.
What?
Superfuss.
Some bitch.
AKA Super Snooper.
I fucking hate that
movie. He was the villain. Do you remember? He was doing that voice where he was like doing like James Cagney.
Oh my god. I blocked that shit out. I can't take that movie. You're so devastated over it.
Oh, it was bad. No, it's terrible.
Oh my god.
So, yeah, they're the cops, and now they're pretty much like, we should investigate this harder, you know, do more. But at the same time, we're getting a whole plot line with Richard Mole's book, and this guy comes into his life to tell Richard Mole, hey, you got to stop this, you got to knock this shit off, right? And his name is Peppercini.
It's not.
What is it? It's
Pepito.
Pepito?
Is it Pepito?
I kept saying, and then someone sounded
Pepini.
Pepini. And I kept going, isn't that a sandwich? Or is that a peppercini? And then we kept saying it over and over.
Mr. Pepini to see you.
I don't know any Pepini.
Panini shows up and he is, he looks like, we kept coming up with ideas of who he looks like.
Peter Jackson, maybe in 1979.
Yeah.
Looking like Peter Jackson.
Very young Peter Jackson looking
with
guy.
With shaggy hair.
Or Paul McCartney went through that beard era. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like that.
That was a really nice look for Paul McCartney.
Yeah, he looked good. And he had those cool vests.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he was doing it.
He was walking around with no shoes and everybody thought he was dead.
No, we didn't like that.
He shows up, Peppercini. And he tells him, you got to knock this shit off because the devil's only more powerful when you make people believe he's not there. And he's like, look, I don't know who you are, Pepperoni. And so get out. Right. So he goes, well, I'll be watching you. And the next scene, he's looking through their trash cans. Now, when we say trash cans,
it's a dumpster.
He's got a dumpster in front of his house.
Okay.
Well, this character and his wife, though, who is the main character on trial here, is living in a house that has a dumpster in front of it. And the guy isn't even looking in on the right side of the dumpster.
No.
Did you notice that?
He's totally not.
Yeah.
But the thing is that the police arrive and say, hey, you, what are you doing stalking around here? Get out of here.
Yeah, but you have to do the little cop's voice.
Hey, what are you doing around here, huh?
I know the Hansons, and you don't know them.
I know the Hansons. I know them, and you don't know them, okay? You don't know the Hansons. They're a prominent couple.
Watch my glasses.
Yeah, don't hit my glasses.
But, like, honestly, so they come in and say to him, you know, why are you stalking around here? And he says, I'm here to protect Mr. Hanson. I'm here to help him.
I'm here to protect the Hansons.
Okay, well, what are you doing? You're not doing anything. You gave up within 2 seconds. You went into this guy's office and told him, hey, I'm here to help you. You know, you're in danger or whatever. Basically, the devil's coming for you.
Yep.
And he just, like, dismisses him. And he's like, okay, I'll leave now. Like, he doesn't put up a fight at all. It's like, why are you
He does fight them off. But then they throw him in the front seat of the car and let him go out the window howling like the Joker.
Yes, I know. But, like, I'm just saying, like, Pepperoni, he's like, his mission is to protect these two people. But why? Why is that his mission? We don't learn why he cares about them.
I think they're talking about how they're opening themselves to Satan.
Right, I know. But how is he connected into this? He's just some Joe Schmo off the street.
He has the 666 tattoo as well. And he's telling them that he knows firsthand about how easy it is to get taken over by the devil and fight him off. So he has some previous experience with it. It doesn't matter. We don't get to find out. What we do find out is that the devil does take interest in the guy who wrote the book, the husband, and he wants to have a meeting with him. But at the same time, the cops have come to the house to try to stop this guy because he's like, look, he tells his buddy, the other cop, we got to go over there. I think it's him. And he shows him. He's like, look, I found this out. This is the same guy and all these different... Although that's exactly what the old man told him. He now just figures it out. That mm-hmm. is true. I love it. They have a whole scene of him looking it through a magnifying glass at all the pictures on the wall, although you could just look at them normally.
I know, right?
And he's like staring at them. And then he's like, they are the same guy. let's go arrest him. Well, they get to the house, and the devil has already beat them there because he traps the one cop in his car, and the other cop comes over, Cameron Mitchell, runs over to help him, and they just blow up. And when we say blow up, it's like someone dropped napalm.
Stock footage.
Stock footage of napalm explosions. And we don't ever see anything about that again. But what we do see is that he kidnaps Richard Mole and puts him on a cross and then becomes a giant monster.
Like a huge clay animation demon.
Yeah.
It's terrible looking. Oh, it's just terrible looking.
Fantastic, Joe. Oh. And my favorite part of these are the humans, like Richard Mole, now becomes a clay animation Richard Mole, but it's like Mr. Bill. It's just like really bad versions. And he just sets him on fire on a cross.
I mean, here's the thing. This is what bothers me about this segment, is that this is nothing to do with his wife, who's the segment is about.
Well,
she's the one being judged.
We do find out right now, Joe, that she goes to a priest and does a confessional, and the confessional, the priest tells her, in some of the worst acting I've ever listened to in my life, that she is the chosen one.
Where have I sinned, Father? What is happening to me?
You have been chosen to combat the evil of Satan and his emissaries on earth. God has granted special powers to those who are pure in thought and kind in heart. This is your cross to bear.
Why me?
We cannot choose our fate, nor the times we are born to live in. It is not by accident that you have met the devil's emissary. You are one of the chosen. He can never destroy you. Now, you have a task to perform. Look down at the floor. It is an ancient box made of the true wood of the cross of our Lord who died on it. Guard this box well, Dr. Claire Hansen. For it is your mission to remove the heart of the devil's demon, Olivier, and secure it in this holiest of vessels.
And that she is here to destined to beat and kill this demon, who he says something like, it's the devil's demon's
disciple.
And I was like, what? What's happening?
Wait, and the third cousin,
yeah.
Once removed.
By the way, he reads everything off cue cards, this priest.
He's terrible. He says, terrible actor.
Look at your feet. There is a box here. And then we see a hilarious thing on the floor, two tiles open up, a light comes out, and a box rises above it, and then the tiles will close underneath it. So funny.
Hey, the art department put some work into that.
It's so amazing. He's like, take it and put his heart inside the box. You have to kill the demon.
The only way to beat him. Now, why is she the one sent to do this?
I don't know. But we do know that there's a random woman in the movie who Pygar goes to, Peppercini or Pepperonis or whatever his name is. He's out of jail, apparently. He goes to a lighthouse on the beach, and he finds, and he sees the woman. Now, I don't know who this woman is. Well, he's like, who are you, you beast? I know you aren't one of the angels. Who are you? And she's like, I'm Ishtar. And she turns around, she's like a skeleton monster with her, like a worm hanging out of her mouth.
I have no idea why this scene even occurred. What does she have to do with the guy that's a demon?
I don't even know who this is. Was this the wife, a person pretending to be the wife? Because I didn't know who the woman was.
No, I don't know who the hell she was. I don't know who she is either.
Well, Pygar, Jesus.
Stop calling him Pygar. Yeah,
PETA. PETA flies.
Papito. That's not his name either.
I know. Flies out.
We're terrible storytellers.
Onto the beach. He gets blown out to the beach. And the beach, the sand on the beach opens up, and a spider clay animation character comes out and grabs a clay animation Peter.
Pepperita.
Pepperitas. Paprika. He grabs Paprika and shoves him into the hell. basically.
Okay, but can I ask you, okay, you said that you found this clay animation to be pretty decent.
I have to give it credit for trying.
But it's bad.
It's bad.
It's really bad. But
it's also kind of quaint. It's also kind of like, oh, they try. You know,
it's
like
a lump of clay that's supposed to be a person.
You know when a kid gives you like a drawing that's terrible and they stick it on your refrigerator and you go, oh, it's so great. I'm going to put it right here on my refrigerator.
Well, that's different.
I watch this movie and I go, I'm going to put it right here on my refrigerator. I'm proud of you for trying. I'm proud. You know, mom, whoever is holding hands in this picture has 18 fingers or whatever it is. It's like, I'm giving you a pat on the head. And I'm giving this movie a pat on the head for this animation.
Our nieces have drawn us things. I love it. But yeah, everybody knows. This is not, like, come on.
That's not something new. We all know that we're pretending when we like those pictures.
I feel like if you can't make it look at least halfway decent, just don't do it. You know?
No, do it. Go for it. I love it when you go for it. Because we're clapping. I was clapping. I'm like cheering. I love this terrible clay animation. Pepperini is dead. And they find his body on the beach. Mm-hmm. And he's just the same thing as the other guy. He, even getting shoved into hell, doesn't matter.
No, so Cameron Mitchell calls up the wife.
Well, he's already dead at this point. I already told everybody that he's dead.
Oh, yeah, he's dead at this point. But
yeah, she gets attacked in a closet. Which is funny. The ground opens up and she starts blowing around like poltergeist.
You skipped the whole scene.
It doesn't matter, Joe.
It doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, but she gets blowing around like she's going to get sucked into hell as well, but she fights it off. We couldn't stop laughing because she's blowing straight, although Satan is right underneath her on the floor.
Oh, my God. I don't even know what they're trying to do here. It looked like a Barbie doll that they were using that they set on fire and it's like melting. Like when I was little, I tried to...
What was that, though? The thing on the floor?
Tried to burn my doll. That was crazy. No, when they were trying to suck her through the hole.
Yeah, but who was the Barbie doll looking thing?
The people on
the floor?
No, the lady. The main character.
No, she's just like holding onto the bar. It's like a stunt man, and they put a terrible wig on him.
Yeah, she looks like she's melting, though. It looked like a fake CG.
I don't remember anything melting.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to watch that scene again. It was bad.
Anyways, no, she makes it out. She survives. That's why she's the chosen one. And now she goes and kidnaps the devil. Because the devil's with like another woman that he found at a bar.
Well, she doesn't kidnap him. She hits him with her car.
Oh, that's right, because there's like a whole sequence where the devil goes and picks up a waitress, and a guy goes to kill him because of the waitress.
I block that scene out, but I could tell you this.
He tucks off his shoes, and he's got a hooves.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he picks up a waitress at a bar, and we know that he's the devil in this scene, because he takes off his sock, and he has a hoof, which... I was like, oh, what did I say to you? I was like, oh, he's going to have some kind of weird toes happening.
Yeah, you're like chicken feet or something.
But like, no. So then our main character, Mrs. Hansen, she hits him with the car and takes him back to her lab because she's a doctor. And she's got him on the table. Like she's going to dissect him and take that heart out because she has to put it in the box.
And she has another random woman with her.
Yeah, it's the woman that he had with him at the house. So I guess she just decided to take her along.
That didn't make any sense.
So stupid.
To me. Yeah.
But she only really needed him, so it was weird. It was just another way to create more carnage in this scene, I guess, by having that girl there. Because he wakes up in the middle of getting his heart cut out and starts attacking the other girl and killing her. And then when Mrs. Hansen takes the heart and puts it in the box and turns around, he's standing there because, and the girl is on the table instead.
And her heart is out. And it was her heart the whole time that she cut out. I don't know how that happened.
I think that he was glamoring her something. Yeah. I don't know. She was under some sort of spell.
Which is odd because he was choking her.
Right.
While she's putting the heart already in the jar.
She cut out the wrong heart. So now is this what she's being judged for? Because it was not her fault either.
The devil, the demon wins and she dies. And so they cut back to Satan and God. And then they're basically, he's like, she never wavered in her belief of me. And he goes, but I won. And he's like, yeah, but even though you won, she still believes in me and still fought for me. So she comes with me. And then he's like, okay, well, I'm taking the husband because he wrote the book. He doesn't believe in you. And he's like, well, I think I'll let her choose.
Yeah. And he's like, I wanted to keep them together. Yeah. God wanted to keep them together.
Yeah. And the devil's mad about it. But then before he can even fight him about this, the conductor guy walks in and goes, it's time for the crash.
So everyone on the train is going to die. Is about to die.
And we get to see an entire train crash. And the whole band is murdered.
They're all dead.
And then we get to watch them sing again.
Well, they're going to be judged next, is what we're led to believe, correct?
Yeah, there's like a discussion about how all musicians either deserve to go to hell. All musicians go to hell.
That was a pretty funny commentary, actually. He's like, yeah, the devil's like, most musicians are with me.
Yeah. And he's like, not all of them. Yeah. So that's it. That's the movie. The train crashes and everybody dies. And then for the credits, we watch the entire music video again.
Again. Now, this is like, what, the fifth time? Because even in the DVD menu screen, we have to listen to this song.
Well, they know. They know. But and I also love the screenshot is of the girl trying to kill the devil on the operating table.
Yes.
It's just like her eyes are crossed and everything. It's amazing.
This movie, this is our second viewing. Now, I'm going to say the first time I gave it a 5.
What?
I did.
Get
I gave
the
it a
hell
5
out of here.
I think because of the whole 80s feel and like just the
you
the
don't
silliness
remember anything but dance with me, dance with me.
Yeah, I think the silliness of it, but I got to tell you, looking back at that review now, I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, I gave it a 3 back then.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think we probably had a little tiff of like, well, oh my God, why did you give it that?
No, you've come a long way in your reviewing. You've started realizing that there's more to a movie.
Well, back
then
I'm like I'm a nostalgia freak.
Yes,
you know. So I love the 80s. I love everything about it. If there's like the more 80s in a movie, the happier of a person I am. Okay, I love the wardrobe, the hair, the ridiculousness of it all. I love it all, and I thought that this movie had that, but I don't know what I was thinking back then because this movie is not a 5.
No.
This movie is not a 5.
So that's the question. My question normally is this the worst movie I've ever seen?
No.
It's not, but it is very close though.
It's pretty bad.
This is a terrible movie. Like
I have to give it, I'm going to say it's a 3. I'll say it's a 3.
I'm lowering my review to a 2. This is one, I do think that this is so bad it's good kind of a level, but it doesn't make a lick of sense. You're watching it just going, what? Who? What?
Yeah.
I would say that maybe this would be a fun time drunk with friends.
I would think so too, because I would probably get up and start dancing every time they played the song. Mm-hmm. But okay. I mean, even so, with even bad movie all-star Cameron Mitchell showing up, it didn't have like any kind of like feel for me. It was too convoluted in most of the stories, and there's only 3, mind you, so it was a little bit ridiculous. As far as anthology goes, that's not really an anthology to me, especially when you're like confusing everything so much.
True. Now I would say to you, because we are saying it's not the worst movie ever made, but we haven't done this in a while, but we have a list that we've started doing of the worst movies we've done on the show. Does this hit the top 10?
The top 10? No.
Really?
I don't think it's in the top 10.
Wow, okay.
I mean, we've seen some freaking garbage.
You would watch this again over some of these movies?
I would watch this again over several of those movies. Like Dinosaur Island, I would watch this again.
I don't know about the top 5, but I'm thinking the top 10. I was thinking, is Murder Size, Showgirls, and Barbarella, and Death Sport worse than this? I don't think so.
No.
I think this is worse.
But I will tell you, I would watch this again over Showgirls. I hate Showgirls. Hate it. I'm never watching that shit again.
Do you think that this should go to number 6?
What's number 5?
A Leprechaun Back to the Hood.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is number 6.
You think this is better than Back to the Hood?
Yes. Well, no, I don't know about that. That's I'm iffy about that. Oh. I think I would rewatch this, but I think Back to the Hood might be better.
Oh man.
I know. Mm. At least it's a plot that actually makes sense. Well,
if you were gonna put it, then put it at 5.
All right. You it's have going to. On our 5. Okay.
And that brings us to our segment of why we can't have nice things, where I read out 2 extremes of internet reviews, a 1 star and a 1 10 star review, as proof that people can't review movies for shit. And they ruin it for all of us. So I'm going to start with the 10 out of 10. There are several 10s on this. So this one's a guilty pleasure worth seeing. My rating is very high because I had the distinction of seeing Night Train to Terror during its theatrical release in 1985. The film can't be compared to any other because it's so unique. It's not, as many other reviewers have stated, just a hack job of old films chopped up. A surprising amount of care went into creating special effects for the second and third stories and didn't appear in the original versions. Also, most surprisingly, new gore footage was shot for the first story, something I never knew until I heard the DVD commentary. If you're a collector, this is a must. For the casual viewer, see it once, and just try to get that song out of your head. 10 out of 10. Okay, this is...
So I'm going to ask you about that 10 out of 10, because I'm a little confused. Are they suggesting that the clay animation stuff was added after and it isn't in the originals?
Yes, sir, that's what he said.
Oh, my God.
He's saying it's not in the originals, but they added that later on.
Oh, no.
Right.
I do want to watch these movies, but now I'm a little shocked.
If that's not in there, what's the reasoning? It's going to be a worse piece of trash.
Oh, my God. I wonder what's not in there and what is. Oh, and now I really want to. I'm so fascinated. Okay, go ahead.
All right, 1 out of 10. Forget Plan 9 from Outer Space. Ed Wood deserves an Oscar compared to this film. Everybody's got something to do, everybody but you. This is a line from the song that the Faded Band sings on the Night Train to Terror in the film. Truthfully, if you have seen the film like me and have sat through its entirety, then everybody really does have something to do. Everybody but you. This film was a grade A piece of horse manure. My apologies to all horse manure for the insult. The plot stinks. God looks like Robert E. Lee, and the devil looks like he just came from the cutting room floor as an extra.
Oh, so true.
That did not make it in the worst episode of Fantasy Island. Worst of all is Richard Mull from TV's Night Court shows us that his part as Bull in the series was Emmy Award-winning caliber compared to his terrible performance here. Jimi Hendrix makes a return from the grave in one of the 3 stories in this film. His line, "Excuse me while I smoke," is spoken while he is being electrified in a scene that appears to be a spoof of another piece of trash, the Death Wish Club. It's a sad world when the only special effects in the film are bad claymation.
Okay. I mean, I think he's dead on.
I can't argue with that.
Can't argue with it at all.
I can argue with this 10 out of 10, though.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, this is ridiculous. He obviously worked on the film crew. Crying out loud.
Oh, man.
He was at the freaking theatrical premiere.
It's that whole thing about how, like, you have something that you love, like, that the song, and he's just, like, has fond memories of hearing it and seeing it, which we did, too. Seeing it again, I'm like, wow, this is terrible.
Well,
like,
it totally out-80s'd itself. I mean, it was so 80s, it was beyond 80s, and so, I love that, but it couldn't save this. I mean, this is a hack job. It really was a hack job, because I didn't understand anything that was going on in these segments. Nice. I've seen horror anthologies, and I love horror anthologies,
we rarely ever see good ones. You've made me watch a lot.
I made you watch a lot. Yeah,
they're not that great.
I mean, we have yet to find a super duper awesome one. I mean, Trilogy of Terror was pretty good.
Tales from the Crypt, and there's some good ones.
There's some good ones. There's really good ones. Tales from the Dark Side. But, I mean, it's hard. I've made you watch several that are just crap. But this one, I think, takes the cake. I mean, I've never seen a worse anthology. It's all caught up. It's all messed up. There's just no rhyme or reason to anything that's happening here. And I feel bad for all the actors involved, especially the poor women who had to get naked for no reason.
Yeah, I saw some trivia where like one of the people who was involved in the movie said, like, wrote a note and said, "I'm extremely embarrassed of mm-hmm. this thing."
I mean, I would be if I worked on it. And so, I usually always say, "Hey, you want me to do a trashy piece of crap, you know, horror movie? I'll do that shit for free." Because I would just love to be a part of it.
To be a part, you would be one of those women on the table.
Yeah, I'm not going to have my bits out. And not in something like this. I mean, it has to be, you know, something with meaning and class.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Have my bits out.
So here's a question. In a couple months, say we put it off for a while, but we have a month where we just dedicated to watching the three movies in this movie, would you be okay with it?
Yeah.
Because if we give it a little bit of time, like a couple months go by, like 3 or 4 months, we won't remember it so much, but when we revisit it, we'll be like, oh my God.
All right. Well, if you can find them.
If I can find them. If you can find them. One of them we have. One, definitely we have one.
Okay. Well, there's one. But honestly, I would, because I need some context on what is happening in this trilogy, or sorry, anthology, with these three films that, you know, have to do with this. I'm baffled. I'm beside myself. I don't understand.
We'll call it clarification month, because we just watched this movie, and then it'll be like a supplemental month of us trying to figure out those three movies.
Good idea, because I think I need to know. I mean, I can't watch this movie and have like no answers whatsoever. It's just the editor really did not do a good job.
I mean, if the clay animation stuff isn't in the original cuts, and that was just filmed for this movie, then I will give whoever worked on the movie a little bit more credit, because at least they made it a little more fun and ridiculous.
Yes, but then what can we expect in the original
film? That's what I'm worried about. It's now I'm kind of like, I'm fascinated. I haven't been this fascinated in watching movies in a long time. We'll probably we should do a fourth movie that's a movie that had another cut to it that is bizarre. Like, Phenomenon. What is that? Is that what it's called?
Phenomena.
Yeah, Phenomena.
What are you talking about? Jennifer Connelly? Yes, Dario Argento film?
We have the other cut of it that everybody thinks is like the worst movie ever. And I've always wanted to watch it. So maybe we should just do that.
Yeah, I'll do Argento. I never say no to Argento.
Yeah. That's like the one where I think it's more about the monkey or something. It's such a weird thing, like American cut of it.
Yeah,
I think it's called Creepers or something. It's not even called that. Yeah,
I think Crawlers. I think
that's something else. You're thinking about a movie we did on the show.
Oh, am I? I get them all mixed up. Crawlers
was the one with the toxic waste and the tree branches.
The stuff that I dream about when I go to sleep.
All right. So, do you have any thoughts on this movie? Besides, do you have any parting thoughts?
No, it's trash. I mean, it was fun to watch because, like, we just looked at each other with our mouths hanging open the whole time. And this is our second time watching it, which means we didn't remember shit that happened. Except for the dance with me, which will never get out of your head ever, ever. And you won't now because we're going to be plugging in the song the whole time. But, no, this is trash. But I'm happy that we watched it again.
And I'm glad we actually have it. We did it because it is like a break in case of emergency movie where it's like this oddity that I feel like people need to see it because it is so friggin' weird.
I just want to hear people, you know, what your thoughts are on this film. Like, what is happening here? I just want to know if there are any people out there that have seen this crazy piece of crap. I would love to know what you're thinking.
Yeah. I mean, even if you just hear this movie exists and you go, well, let me go watch it.
Yeah.
And you don't come out the same way because you're just like, what? Yeah. Like the whole movie is just one big question mark.
It is. And your mouth is hanging open most of the time because you're just like, what did I just watch?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I want everyone to see this movie. I feel like you have to see it just because I it's just something to behold. It's definitely a different kind of filmmaking. It's like they either cared too much or didn't care at all. It's weird.
Well, I mean, yes, absolutely. Well, this is the end of this month of oddities that we found with these weird things that had a weird running theme, especially trains. We're moving on to February, which is our Valentine's Day month, where we give love to somebody who's made suggestions online. So we will be doing an entire month of One person suggested four movies, so we'll be watching those four movies.
Whoa, all right. Yeah, I need to know who's responsible for that.
Oh, that would be Viking Ken online.
Viking Ken.
Who has a whole story of how we met him and everything in real life. Yeah, so.
We met Viking Ken in person. Yeah. He's a very nice guy.
We'll talk about that every episode.
Will I still like you, Ken? I don't know.
So, yeah, that's until next time, everybody. Thanks for listening. As always, hit us on Instagram and give us your picks or give us why you think you should dance with us. Dance with us. I would love to hear it. Also, Peppercini says hi. Hit us on Instagram at Just Another Movie Night and Joe at The Crafty Misfit making some nice things. Go check it out. Thanks, as always. Thanks for listening. Have a good one. Bye. Mama's at the shopping mall.